Hey everyone, welcome to the Crypto Rabbit Hole. Today we have on Jeff Booth. Welcome to the Crypto Rabbit Hole. Great to have you here. Thanks for coming.
Thanks for having me.
I started the Crypto Rabbit Hole to promote financial and crypto literacy to kids my own age. So, you know, I'm excited for today and I think we'll learn a lot. So let's dive right in. So, awesome. Yeah, so your book, The Price of Tomorrow, in part talks about the idea of inflation stealing our wealth. So before we dive into that, can you first explain what inflation and deflation are and what the difference is between them?
Sure. If I simplify that, it's just inflation is where your money is worth less over time. And deflation is the opposite of that, where your money is worth more over time. That's probably the simplest explanation for inflation or deflation.
I've heard different opinions on this, and obviously it depends on the context, because balance always matters. But is inflation always a bad thing? And if it isn't, why is it a bad thing right now?
So is now we're going to start going down the rabbit hole on this.
That's the goal.
So if you think about what the natural economy would be. And the natural economy with technology moving more and more or faster and faster would be we get more for less. So we use technology to free our time. And what that means is as we use more technology and we automate things, we should have more time. And so that's what a normal free market would look like. And what it would say is that unless human beings are making the same mistakes over and over and over again, if you're not getting any more efficient, then prices might stay the same. But if you're getting more and more efficient, then you'd expect, if you look at camera today, we don't buy cameras today, we buy a phone with abundance of information, cameras, ability to take pictures on them. And so all of that efficiency gain should be freeing our time. And that's what the natural market should look like. But we live in a world where we believe that inflation should exist. And I mean, a collective, we believe that to run a productive society that we need inflation. And it's simply not true. What is true is that for a credit-based system to survive, a credit-based system needs inflation, because the money that people think that there's money sitting in the bank, and it's mostly not money sitting in the bank, it's credit in the bank. And if you allow deflation against a credit-based system, that credit-based system unwinds and it keeps on unwinding. So people don't ask themselves a question, and this is why this is a really deep question, so they just believe you need inflation. And all inflation is somebody arbitrarily destroying your time. Essentially, there's a theft in money itself, whether it's 2%, 5%, anything else. But people believe that you need inflation to live in a productive society. And it's not true. It is true that you need inflation to be able to pay back the debt that you've already borrowed in cheaper terms tomorrow.
Okay, so there's a few things to unpack there. So,
quite a few things to unpack there.
So, can you talk a little bit more about what credit is and how credit plays into this whole situation?
It's worth going back in time to do that. So we used to, what typically happens kind of on a currency level, and let's use gold as an example. Used to be able to hold gold, and then people would hold the gold for you and lend you money against your gold. And then over time, you built a credit-based system on top of that gold, and then you removed the need for the gold. So there actually wasn't, and so that credit-based system, that credit is really a trade. That there's more and more credit evolving all the time, and there must be more credit and more loans to other people for that system to be able to survive. And so if you started with hard money, gold, then you built layer 2 and layer 3, kind of a whole system on top of that, and then you removed the gold. So you know, actually, you no longer had essentially something backing the system. You just had debt backing the system. And that debt remember, these two systems are colliding each other. One system, essentially deflation, that wants to free your time, is trying to give you more for less. And the system we live in, currently an inflationary monetary system, has to push against it. It has to go the other way. So you have society kind of on a wheel in an inflationary system, trying to escape kind of their money being devalued over time. And one thing that I think is important to recognize here is, you know, when you said people say some inflation is good, ask them why they believe that's true. And because when you say some inflation is good, it's not a prerequisite. It's a prerequisite for a system that requires it. And that system that requires it needs to manipulate money more and more and more to be able to achieve that. So inflation being good or bad, inflation, if you have debt, inflation is good for you because you pay the debt back in cheaper terms tomorrow. If you don't have debt, if you have savings, or if you have wages, inflation is terrible for you. Right. Because it destroys the value of your money or the value of your earnings. Mm-hmm. And so it's just two sides of it. It's two sides of the same coin. And so if you have a whole bunch of debt or you have a whole bunch of assets, then inflation will be good for you. But it doesn't change the fact that it transfers money from somebody else to you through a hidden theft in money.
Okay. And so the second example of inflation, the one you described as bad, regarding like wages and savings, that's largely what we're seeing today, right?
Yeah. So exactly. One side, inflation is exactly the other side of the coin to inflation, is wage deflation or savings deflation. So there's two sides of the same coin. And so some people, and so what you have built into kind of into money itself is a theft in money, and people question the rate of the theft instead of should there be theft in money. That point that you just asked, and a whole bunch of people falsely believe, is there should be some theft in money, right? 2% mm-hmm. theft is okay, but instead of asking why do we have any theft in money.
Yeah, you know, I've never heard anyone say it like that. So my question then is, what happens when we stop printing money?
So that's the problem. So the problem today is we live in one system that's transitioning to a new system, and those two systems are moving further and further apart. So I like to think about these two, an angle like this, and saying technology moving exponentially is trying to free your time exponentially. And so you use, why you use Google, why you use an iPhone, why you use Amazon, why we use Zoom, is because it gives you more for less. So we are all individual actors in an economy trying to find more value, which technology is providing us over and over and over again. And we're creating the monopolies we see around us by our race to get more value. And yet in the world, we're working against that system. So we all vote to save ourselves more time, get more information, get things for free and everything else. And that's what technology applies. Mm-hmm. Yet the world is trying to push against that by printing more and more faster and faster to try to drive inflation. So if you look at those two systems moving apart farther and farther, so on one system, as you try to, so listen, the system we live in, right? The system we live in is an inflationary monetary system, and we measure our houses and we measure everything from that system. And it took $185 trillion over the last 20 years to grow GDP by $46 trillion. So it took all of that printing of money, unnatural. You wouldn't have seen inflation without it, to be able to push prices up. Those prices moving up come at the expense of a whole bunch of other people that can't now afford their food, their housing prices, of course, rent prices, and everything else. So at the same rate, you're trying to push against the natural market by manipulating money. You're also distorting the free market all over. Every single price signal is broken. And so what would the world look like if you look through that lens and you understand one system's colliding another, against another system? People would be bound to be confused in that system because they're measuring everything from one system that's distorting money supply. And they're trying to escape that. So it doesn't matter who you are, whether you're wealthy in that, you're trying to buy more houses to try to escape the valuation or the devaluation of your money. If you're in your age group, if you're in your age bracket, there's a whole bunch of people, and I would say taking random bets on cryptocurrencies to try to escape what they see as an unfair world and trying to escape. And so the economy turns more into a lottery, right? And then that system has to keep on looking like that. And so you have a whole bunch of people making rational decisions for themselves to try to escape a system. So if you look through that lens and you say, what does the world look like? That is what the world looks like. It's just a mirror reflection of that type of manipulation going on with money. And it has to get worse, unfortunately, because the existing system can't allow what I'm talking about, deflation. So as technology, you think about what ends up happening as prices unnaturally get pushed up. What do you think companies will do when they can't find labor or the labor costs too much? They'll automate faster, right?
Right.
Which requires more printing to push prices up higher and higher. So you have these two systems feeding back further and further away, with society caught in between of those two systems. That's what the world looks like today.
Okay, so I think I know what your answer is going to be to this, but I'm going to ask this question anyway. So obviously, like people say, or we've been taught from a young age that we live in a free market society, but it's obviously not true, because in a free market society, the government would never intervene to provide a safety net in times of emergency, or even just to people that are less well off in general. So my question is, do you think we'd be better off in a total free market? Because people would definitely, there definitely would be people who would fail and not do well at all. So this is
going to be a nuanced answer. My answer is unequivocally yes, we would be better off in a free market. But from one system to another, this is going to be a really tough transition for all of humanity. Because by manipulating the free market, when you have this much manipulation in money, there are no free markets anywhere. And I like to say, when you have manipulation in the base layer of money, or corruption in the base layer of money, which is just, and money, all money is a trade of our time. You actually probably don't want more money. You want more things that you think, more experiences that you think money will buy you. The money does not know. It's what you think the money will buy you, whether it's safety, more time with your family, more time. So when you destroy that concept of what money is, then you must, and so you have corruption in base layer money, then you must have corruption everywhere in society as a result. And that's what it looks like through the world today. And so there are no free, when there's that manipulation in money, and people think there's a free market on top of that manipulation, there's no free market anywhere as a result. But it raises an interesting question. How do you move from one system to another?
Yeah.
Because if governments today, if governments started, it stopped printing, and there is no money in the bank, it's all credit, then every single thing you look out at, including the banks themselves, would unwind, and everything would keep unwinding. It would just keep on the deflation spiral from where we are. The debt wipeout would be so severe, and the debt wipeout is what people consider as money. So hospitals would fail. You wouldn't find food on your shelves of the supermarket. There'd be no money to pay. There'd be no money to pay people building roads, firefighters. The chaos would look so bad. Banks would close, everything else. And so what governments are trying to do is they're trying to stop that, not realizing that they're making it worse and worse and worse all the time. And so they're stuck. There is no good answer from this. And that's actually why I've become such a strong proponent of Bitcoin as well.
Yeah.
Because you need a system transfer. You need a network transfer, like a bridge from one system to another. And yes, the people that go earlier on Bitcoin will have more of the gains, absolutely. But the system transfer is the most important thing. It's from one system that has to create inflation to a system that's more congruent or is congruent with the free market.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I've heard that a lot, actually, and from other people. But my question is, so I've heard you say on other podcasts that you lean towards Bitcoin because it brings fairness and equity to the world. Yep. And this is moving a little bit off of inflation and more to inequality. But my question is, how can Bitcoin bring about fairness and equity if the rich can automatically attain more of a supply of Bitcoin than those who have less money? Then doesn't that inequality still play out in that system?
No, and that's a really important part to the, and it's often missed in this. Let's go back to the thing. The rich today, three people in the U.S. control 50% of all wealth in the U.S. Mm-hmm. Three people. The wealthy today donate to political parties and their works. And why do you think we have a system that looks like this? And here's, remember, they can't make a bad bet, because every bad bet they make, if they lever a bad bet, they get bailed out by taxpayer money to mm-hmm. make it worse. The most unjust system in the world for the majority of the people in the world is the system we're in. And it has to get worse. Who do you think controls that system? A new system, and there is, there the people that go early on Bitcoin will have more wealth. But here's the thing that I think there's 21 million Bitcoin, or call it 18 million Bitcoin, because probably that many, probably 3 yeah. million probably been lost. But let's use 21 million as an example. 21 million Bitcoins in Satoshis, you divide each Bitcoin by 100 million to get this Satoshis. But there's 2,700, 2,800 billionaires in the world. There's 46 million millionaires in the world. And there's no way for all of those people to get one Bitcoin. It's impossible.
Wait.
There's four. If you said 46 million millionaires in the world, 47 million millionaires in the world. They all today couldn't get one Bitcoin. So now let's assume, okay, there's a transfer and there's a bunch of Bitcoiner people in Bitcoin that were there early that have more than other people. So there's going to be a redistribution anyways. But in a Bitcoin, what's more important is this. How do you gain more Bitcoin later on as this system is is moving. And let's imagine, okay, let's say I have let's imagine I have 2000 Bitcoin and I want to control people like the existing system can do, right? And to control people, what I would have to do is I would have to distribute my Bitcoin to control them, which is me losing control by trying to control people. Whether I wanted to create a war machine, I have to distribute my Bitcoin by doing that. So the only way to gain Bitcoin in a system that is actually based on fair rules is by providing value to other people, which is the free market.
Okay.
That's the biggest change. And there's an important thing tied into that. I don't believe in equality, in everybody should be equal.
Equity.
Because at any certain time in a free market, some people's skills are more valuable than someone else's.
Yeah.
What I care about is fairness. What I care about is truth and fairness. I care about when we say inflation that's based on a hidden theft in a system that nobody votes for, that enriches some at the expense of the others. That I disagree with.
Okay. Yeah, that actually makes a lot of sense. Never thought about it that way. So I've also heard you say on other podcasts, and you kind of alluded to it now, but I take it that you see that Bitcoin eventually will be a reserve currency, right?
I think it's inevitable. And when I'll say that, some people, okay, it's because I try to choose my words pretty carefully there. What I would say is, I hope it's inevitable.
Okay.
So an existing system has a lot of the if it isn't, if Bitcoin doesn't win, I don't know if I would want to live in the world that's going to come forward that looks like Bitcoin not winning. Because if you look through the lens of what has to happen in that world and how it's a system based on manipulation that concentrates wealth more and more in power, kind of very small amount of people controlling everything else for everybody else. And those people could change their mind. If you think through the ramifications of what that means, I sure hope Bitcoin wins.
So just to clarify, when you say you don't want to live in a world where Bitcoin doesn't win, are you saying, is that more about Bitcoin or is it more about the current system we have now? Because I'm just wondering, like, would you be open to like instituting a type of money that might not exist now, but somewhere near in the future that might be developed to be an improved version of Bitcoin or better than Bitcoin in any certain way? So I
think that's a good question, a really good question. I just, I've gone down pretty deep on this. I don't know if that's possible. Now, am I open to that possibility? Yes, I'm open to that possibility. But I haven't seen anything, and I think that could do that and remain independent, remain decentralized, right? And because if you look back on Bitcoin emerging, there's no way if governments knew what it was going to become, that they wouldn't have stopped it. And you can control these type of networks early on. And if you control them early on, and that's what a lot of the different altcoins look like, you can concentrate wealth and power again and change the system. So because Bitcoin was missed for so long, it's hit an escape velocity that creates a really unique set of circumstances that I can't see being repeated.
Okay.
That's and so that's probably one of the reasons. Now, I might be wrong, but I have not yet seen something that has the chance to take money out of government's hands and redistribute the wealth to the people as a result.
Okay, so in that you kind of answered my next question, but so outside of, you know, political figures or governments who might see it as a threat and are against it, there are also a lot of people who are skeptical and not willing to, you know, put their trust in it. So I'm wondering, first of all, why? Why are so many people against it? And even if you disagree with them, are there any potential arguments that they might have that you could sympathize with?
Most of the arguments come out of an existing, call it fiat mindset, that and what they're doing is they're measuring the system from a system. So let's use the climate change the proof of work on. There's a lot of people who believe Bitcoin is bad for the environment because it uses energy, mm-hmm. And it uses energy to secure the network. I believe that that is the only thing that could fix the environment. Why must that be? I'm on a whole bunch of boards of technology companies that do a whole bunch of work in climate related agriculture, climate related things. And all of the work that they're doing is deflationary. In other words, people are going to get more for less as a result of these companies delivering value. Every one of the companies' boards I'm on, you should see what's coming as far as value in all sorts of different industries. That concept means that just like your iPhone giving you photos and it's now an AI assistant and everything else, it's coming to a whole bunch of other industries like food. And it's deflationary. So what that means is prices should be coming down in a whole bunch more industries that they're still going up. And when you add those industries that prices are going to come down to, that means the government has to print more money to be able to make prices go up. In other words, the very thing causing climate change is the system that must require growth at all costs and will manipulate money to get there. So do I sympathize or empathize with a whole bunch of people that look at climate change and say, this is the scariest problem of the world, but they don't know they're measuring it from a system that is actually creating it. And so there's actually a lot of arguments that I would say that I understand. I understand why people would see that argument. Here's another one. Education for your age group, harder and harder to get in, price goes up forever. And then there's a whole bunch of people in the world that cannot get into that education system.
Yeah.
Education's already free. We just don't know it's free. When I went to school, that system promised you a better job. And it persists for a while because of my age group's belief that their kids will get a better job and they'll pay anything to get into the best school. But education's already free. Certification is not free. And I've hired thousands of people. And I can tell you, who I always hire now is the person who's constantly curious rather than the person who went to Harvard or somebody else that thinks now, yeah, I made it. And so there's a whole bunch of these industries responsible for a whole bunch of what we measure today as GDP, high GDP, that are going to collapse and lower GDP as we get more for less. And the result of all of those collapses requires more and more printing to push the other remaining industries higher in price to offset what I'm saying. And so I can understand a whole bunch of the people that are stuck in this system that's more and more pain, measuring the system from the system. And I can understand why they might not see a different system could produce better results. But but I have not seen an I have not seen yet a plausible or realistic reason against Bitcoin.
Okay. Yeah, I agree. I think a lot of it comes also with just lack of education and people being closed-minded to it because it's a new system, just from what I've seen. But circling back to a concept we talked about a few minutes ago regarding Bitcoin becoming a reserve currency. So you're optimistic about that. What are some major obstacles that might get in the way of that?
Us, our human nature. And I'm being serious. So why do you think we believe in an inflationary monetary system? Or why do you think it's so easy to believe, to convince a whole bunch of, when I say people, I mean you, me, everybody. Why is that so easy?
Well, I think one part of it is because people empathize with the idea that there can be a safety net and that the government can bail us out. And I think that plays into inflation, right?
I think it's actually bigger than that. I think it's this. We want to believe we can get more than we actually can. And so if a politician actually said, had to campaign on the truth and say, here's the amount of funds we have and here's the services we can deliver, they would never get elected.
Right.
So we all vote for politicians who tell us a lie. And so that human nature is such a powerful thing. And we don't believe we will, and it's way worse than that. So we want our house to go up forever if we have a house, yet we want everything else in our life to go down in price. And so it's our incongruence as kind of a general, all of us, not being able to put these pieces together that allow a system to say, okay, I can give them more for less, I can do this, but I need to hide some of this money, hide some of my tax revenue in a hidden theft. And it gets away on itself. And the debt keeps on growing and growing. And then you realize, whoa, I can't pay it back. I need to do a greater amount of theft to be able to pay it back. And that's where we are in the system today. So it's a collective. We will vote for people who do that. And so it's to me, it's something in all of us that and that's actually as well why Bitcoin is so important, because we won't make the choice to change that system unless it's self-interested for us to make that choice. And so the net effect of more and more people making a choice for Bitcoin, and they think that choice is, at first, I'm going to make a whole bunch of money in Bitcoin. That emergent nature of Bitcoin and more people making that choice fixes that incentive system where we wouldn't do that. That's actually the point. And on top of that new incentive system, then what it means is politicians have to tell us the truth.
Okay. I think I understand what you're saying.
And so what could, if you ask what is this, the single thing I worry about most on Bitcoin, it's us. Because if you looked all over the world and you looked at the millions of people hitting the streets and advocating for their individual rights and freedoms, if those millions of people just bought Bitcoin instead, they'd have their individual rights and freedoms back in an instant. It would happen so fast. Instead, they make a system stronger by turning people against each other, which the system uses to be able to turn people against each other more.
And then get themselves elected too.
Exactly. And so that system, and that system normally resets through violent means, revolution, war, and then global conflict. If you look through histories of when the world looks like this, and a monetary where a debt cycle cannot be kicked down the can any longer, and that's where we are today. And what normally happens in that is people do unbelievable things to other people because they're manipulated to believe it's those other people's fault instead of a system problem.
So you do think it'll get to that, to the point where we have violence in the streets in between these two systems?
You're seeing it today.
Yeah.
You're seeing it today. Like, look at what's happening in San Francisco. Look at what's happening in
all over,
everywhere in the world. It's a image of, and because my book came out 2 years ago and predicted all of this.
Mm.
It's two systems moving away from each other faster and faster. And if you understand what's happening, then that's actually why I advocate for Bitcoin, because I think it's the only transition to something of sanity.
Yeah. So my next question, and I think this might be our last little segment, just because I think we're running a little short on time, but so COVID, the new variant was announced a few days ago. So first of all, if this new variant brings another cycle of lockdowns, we're back to where we were in 2019, you know, leading to more inflation. First of all, how do we move forward in the short term? And secondly, what if theoretically COVID does, you know, end up becoming this cycle where there's a new outbreak and then there's a new variant and, you know, it keeps coming back for many years to come. How does society react to that? Like, is it something like you're describing now with someone's going to have to step up and, you know, change something with the way.
I want to be careful here because this could sound like a conspiracy theory, and I don't think it is, but if you realize that government has to control a narrative, and there shouldn't be inflation in the market today, there should be deflation, but they realize that if there's deflation, everything collapses. There's only inflation because we've printed unbelievably amounts of to over 25% of the money that's ever been printed this year. So that's why there's inflation. And the minute that you slow down printing, you'll go into a deflationary spiral. So if you know that, then you might need cover to be able to print more. And COVID might be a cover to be able to print more. But no matter what the cover is, whether it's global warming, whether it's COVID, whatever the narrative is that people will believe to allow government to print more, which is really just a concentration of power. Because remember, by printing more, you're taking from the majority of the people to give to a very few, very few. Mm-hmm. And when you do that, the majority of the people who are left out of that rise up and vote for somebody else who will say it's those people's fault. So that's actually what we're talking about. But no matter what the narrative is, whether it's COVID, global warming, anything else, you need a great narrative in the world that people will believe and give you more power to be able to print more money. And that's what's and so I don't want to talk about, like, you could easily connect that to conspiracy theory on COVID. But you need a narrative that allows you to print money. And all of these, and when I think about the control of us, the removal of individual rights and freedoms in favor of government lockdowns or in favor of something that scares a whole bunch of people to be able to drive control, it's a requirement of the system.
Yeah, I mean, it makes total sense what you're saying. And we're seeing it. We see it every day.
It's hard to believe. Like, even again, I predicted all of this in the book, right? But it's hard to even watch around the world as this accelerates.
Yeah.
And and the consequences, and most people are talking about the consequences of the printing of the money. They're looking at the branches instead of the roots. And they're focused on, and if you look at the divide of society, most people are talking about whatever their thing is to hate somebody else around this. People don't rise up. People don't rise up, and humanity doesn't look like it will under sound money.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's hard to hear, but it's also hard to argue with.
And that's why I said yes to come on your show. If a whole bunch more people your age understand this and what they can do I wrote the book specifically for my kids because they wouldn't grow up in the same type of world that I grew up in unless a change was made from one system to another. And I think that's a really important thing to talk about.
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying.
Yeah.
But, so just before we wrap up, so, I mean, just aside from your book, is there anywhere else, you know, anyone who might be watching can learn more about you or your ideas?
Best spot for me is just on Twitter, at Jeff Booth on Twitter, and I'm connected to a lot of these ideas but through that people can find me and a whole bunch of other podcasts and such on this and learn for themselves why this is so important.
Okay, perfect. Yeah, so I encourage everyone to find him on Twitter, read his book, The Price of Tomorrow. And yeah, so thanks, Jeff. It was really great having you on and really appreciate your time.
No problem at all.
And as always, make sure to subscribe to the Crypto Rabbit Hole on YouTube and to follow me on Twitter at AP_rabbit hole. Always find us at cryptorabbithole.net. And thanks for watching.